My guest today is Richard McKinney, the Transportation Department Chief Information Officer. I caught up with Richard before a recent conference.
All right, Richard, let me start with something that came up in the morning panel at the Brocade Forum conference about CapEx, OpEx, O&M, DME, whatever you want to call it. Sure. Something that every agency seems to be struggling with. In fact, the recent Grant Thornton CIO survey talked about something to the effect of 75 to 77% of all IT dollars are put toward O&M, operations and maintenance of legacy systems. Give me a sense, transportation, probably no different than most agencies. How are you dealing with this challenge?
We are having a very robust internal conversation about that. Is that I think we, as a department, are coming to the conclusion that if we can figure out, not if, when we figure out and when we're able to implement IT services, IT infrastructure as a service, as a shared service, as an enterprise service, if we could drive the cost out of the infrastructure, the networks, the servers, the desktop, the personnel that attends to all that, if we could figure out a way to simplify all of that, do some of it in the cloud, as you know, have people provide those services for us, keep some of it obviously in-house and then we do it, but vastly simplify that. We would like to think that we could drive the cost down and that we could take that money and invest it in DM&E modernization. I think we are all of the opinion that over time, one of the reasons we sometimes get hamstrung with legacy applications is we find ourselves spending so much time on the infrastructure side, so much money on the infrastructure side, that that beast always gets fed first, and you end up kicking the can down the road on the solutions layer. And I think our customers are saying, hey, we want a more modern solutions approach to, our business needs at the solution layer. And what we're saying is, well, then the way to do that is let's have a very broad and meaningful reevaluation of how we do basic infrastructure, try to drive the cost down there so that we can rebalance what you said, that the op costs versus the DM&E.
How do you balance that infrastructure, and how do you have that conversation? Where does it begin? Because I imagine you as a CIO who walks into the transportation department, people before you made decisions that you may or may not agree with, and in the end, maybe that doesn't matter, but where do you begin the conversation? Because I think so many agencies are beginning the conversation, but then what do you do next?
Where I decided to begin, it was actually just to try to develop a meaningful governance process, to bring my component CIOs to a business roundtable where we begin to look at these issues together, not separately in our silos, but together. And my challenge to the component CIOs was start looking at things the way I as the enterprise, as the departmental CIO, must look at them. Let's look at these things holistically. On the other hand, I will put myself in your shoes and try to see what's it like to be a component CIO and still deliver business value to the people that I report to. And if we can meet each other in that kind of a forum where we can understand one another and understand that our collective challenges, and then to begin to work on the governance and the analysis that's required to re-architect this and to reimagine this. And I spent a good bit of time early doing that because DOT was very federated and siloed is a term people use. And we're trying to move away from that model. And I think the key to moving away from it is governance. And so that's the changes that I feel are taking place at DOT.
We've talked in the past about the governance changes you're making. Give me an update in terms of, now that you have this process in place, you are looking at enterprise services to a certain extent, have you started down that path of saying, here's our first enterprise service, or here is how this component is going to provide this service to the rest of the department?
Yes, and this business council that I reestablished with the modal CIOs, we form committees, and we've been doing analysis together, and those committees are reporting back to the whole, and we're doing our homework, and we're pretty far down the road. We're at places now where we're going to begin to institute and make some of these changes around our shared provisioning of shared services. So we've made great progress, and we think that progress is accelerating.
Do you get a sense of what will be first? A lot of people obviously go email in the cloud. Some people talk about storage or data center consolidation. Where are you guys heading?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of that. I mean, it's obviously, you know, there is a mandate. Part of FITARA was, you know, hey, you know, sort of formalize the whole data center consolidation, network consolidation issue. We're well down that road doing that, beginning to fold data centers in. We're doing an analysis of our, you know, the network across the country that hooks all our regional offices, and we're making changes there. And we're also now beginning in, you know, the planning and procuring services and moving into a cloud model. So, because I think at the end, you know, what our end goal is to get to the place where we own and operate only that which we need to, because we have to keep it in-house, that we get, you know, a lot of the services we need from cloud providers. And so that hybrid model is what we're working towards. And we're starting to take the steps that's going to get that done.
From a cloud model perspective, there's strategies, there's implementation plans. What should people expect from DOT when it comes to the cloud? Are there any even contracts or RFPs or RFIs coming?
When I came, I found that FAA, which is our largest component, had a cloud contract they were putting together for their own purposes. And when I sat and I had them brief me on it. When they were done briefing me on it, I said, is it possible that we could broaden this contract so that it not just covers FAA, that covers the whole department? And in order to do so, FAA, much to their credit, said, okay, let's do that together. They didn't stop the process, but they quickly created some, we had a series of meetings where modal representatives came in. They went over all the ins and outs of that contract to try to make sure that the contract that then we put out on the street would meet not only the needs of FAA, but everyone else. And they did a great job of that. It's, you know, sort of a, was one of the first things that I sort of signaled to the department that FAA and the rest of the department were going to work closely together moving towards this new paradigm. And that contract now is, it's out, it's, you know, the responses are back, they're in the evaluation stage, and I think award, you know, will come relatively soon.
There's been some discussion around FedRAMP, the idea of low and moderate, and maybe now they're developing a high baseline. Where does transportation see itself? Is it only the commercial cloud you're looking at? Is it government-only commercial cloud? Is it hybrid clouds? And I know it's going to be different for everything because of the sensitivity of the data, but what do you see as the path?
It'll clearly be hybrid, because there are clearly things that we can do in a commercial cloud setting. We can do it securely, we can do it cost effectively, and they can really do it better than we could do it for ourselves. There are other things, I think, that we're always going to feel like need to stay in-house. So part of it is designing an architecture where that's seamless. That hybrid model is seamless to operate and you know, to ramp up, ramp down.
We have to take a break. My guest today is Richard McKinney, the Transportation Department Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guest today is Richard McKinney, the Transportation Department Chief Information Officer.
You mentioned FITARA. A lot of CIOs now have the so-called marching orders from OMB of how to implement. You have deadlines to meet. I think August is the first deadline, and then you have another one in December around baselines. Talk about what FITARA means for DOT, and where do you go forward with FITARA in the implementation guidance?
We're well down the road on FITARA. I was part of the executive working group that worked with OMB on the guidelines. So I saw the guidelines in their early stages. I saw them through the draft stages. So we kind of knew what was coming. So several months ago, I began to have a series of meetings inside DOT around IT, the acquisition issues, around the HR issues, around the budget issues, and invited the modal representatives into those meetings. And we have been working to try to, what you referenced was in August, we have to come up with our implementation plan. You know, one of the things that I feel really fortunate at the Department of Transportation is that in the CXO suite between finance, budget, acquisitions, and human capital, that my cohorts, my counterparts in those various offices really get it. They, you know, in fact, two of them sat on the in that same executive working group. So there is an agreement between in the CXO suite that this is our moment, this is our time, that we need to be successful with this, and that a successful implementation of this requires these four offices to work very closely together. So we've taken that spirit of cooperation, we're trying to extend that down through the components, let them say, how would a successful implementation look to you? We're incorporating that feedback, and we're well on our way to having our implementation plan written, and I think we'll beat that August 15th deadline by quite a bit.
I remember having a conversation, I don't know if it was with you or somebody else, about the FITAR is nice, but it's really about the interpersonal relationships between the CIO, the CFO, the CIO, and the acquisition or the HR. And in the end, FITAR just becomes an underlier to say, well, I do have this piece of paper, so to speak, but really, if my relationship's not good, the piece of paper doesn't matter. Has there been something that you've done over the last year and a half, 2 years that you've been in government to promote that relationship with the CFO or the chief acquisition officer or the chief human capital officer?
I feel fortunate in that my counterparts in those offices in DOT really understand that information technology is so important, and it only is only growing in importance to how we do business. And you know, they understand how we, the four of us, if you will, if I can put it that way, how these four offices work together will determine our success. That IT is not just the sole province of the CIO's office. That the budget plays a role, and acquisition plays a role, and they play a vital role in this. This is a four-legged stool, if you will, and they get that. And the fact that we all are working on how to do it and not having a conversation of why we should do it. They've always been in a how should we do it frame of mind. So, like I say, I think we have a really golden opportunity here to sort of set the foundation for, you know, the kind of meaningful change. You know, the thing I recognize, and this is what I tell people about FITAR. FITAR is not just about authority. It's about accountability. You know, there's a whole backside to that law. It's about accountability around data center consolidation and shared services and investment review and all of those things. Well, that's as it should be. You know, CIOs, we shouldn't take this job unless you're willing to accept that accountability. But then you also have to make sure that the authorities put you in a position to be successful, you know, and be able to be held accountable for that stuff. And so that's what we're working towards, is to make sure that the authorities really have the teeth necessary so that when we have to make the hard decisions that we're going to be held accountable for, that we can make that.
One of the things that we've seen over the years is the discussion around, yeah, well, we work great together, but does it get trickled down to the people who do the work, if you will? You make the decision, but it's your staff working with the staff over the chief acquisition officer or the staff of the CFO who says, oh, well, we're updating our financial system. Did we call the IT folks to see if this meets their standards? Nah, don't worry, it's fine. You know, how do you get past that decision-making process to ensure that it does trickle down? Because I'll give you an example, non-IT related, but the Mythbusters program that OFPP put out a number of years ago, it worked really well at the very high level. CAOs all recognize it, but the people who are doing the acquisition every day still are not as familiar as maybe you'd hope them to be. How are you ensuring that trickle-down effect?
I think that's what the CIO and the CFO and the budget officer and the acquisition officer, that's what we should be held accountable for. You know, this is not some high-level, you know, conversation only. This is about, you know, how we transform the way we do business. And so I think when the four offices, if you will, when we leave these meetings with these agreements, it's beholden upon each of us to make sure that our organization performs accordingly. And I think all four of us will be held accountable for making sure that it does permeate down through our organizations. And I think it's our responsibility to do health checks on that over time and to fine tune it, because it isn't going to be perfect on day one. But you got to get back together and say, how are we doing? How did this process work? How's it going with acquisitions? You know, how's the budget approval process going? I'll give you an example. I think one of the thorniest one is the whole thing around acquisition and proving purchases. What does that mean? Does that mean every requisition comes across my desk? Well, that's a recipe for a train wreck. You know, that'll be our bottleneck, is a better way to put it. But what kind of processes we can put in place that I can say, I can look anybody in the eye and say, yes, I have visibility into that IT spend without thinking that I have to see every requisition that goes out the door. So the mechanics of this is the work ahead of us, how to take what I think are good, great intentions and a great starting point as far as a framework, but how to make it work.
I know you're on the CIO Council's executive board. You co-chair one of the committees, the Workforce Committee, along with Darren Ash. Talk about the CIO Council's input into FITAR, not necessarily of writing the implementation. What discussions have you guys had about helping agencies implement it? Because as you said, some people are further down the road than others.
We're really at the very beginning. I think implementing FITAR is clearly a major agenda item for the CIO Council, the CIO Executive Committee, is that we understand that this is not about drafting guidelines. This is about executing. And we're all, you know, sharing ideas with one another, best practices. That's our intention, is to, as we go forth and try to implement this, we're going to continue to have the conversation of what's working for you, what's not working, you know, what roadblocks are you encountering, how are you dealing with them, you know, do we need to change policies or procedures in order to make this successful. So the entire CIO community realizes this is our moment. This is, I think, arguably a tipping point, and it's beholden upon us to not only communicate well within our departments, but across departments about how we put this into play so that it's broadly successful across the federal government.
Obviously, a lot of discussion on cyber in the post-OPM breach. But one thing about the breach that I've seen as I've been covering it, if I went to the hearings and saw what's been written and talked about, any agency could be in those seats. You as the CIO of DOT easily could be sitting where the OPM CIO sat before Congress. And it's not just transportation, it could be any agency. How much of a wake-up call, and maybe you even need one because cyber is not like it's new, but when you look at it from a CIO's perspective, do you say to yourself, wow, that could be me, and what could I do today to really not be in the unfortunate place that OPM is?
Well, yeah, obviously, you know, people always say, what keeps you up at night? I think we all would say cyber issues. You know, on a positive note, I think that what's this particular, you know, these recent events mean to me is that we are having a very broad conversation within DOT about what are our high-value assets that we wouldn't want to see in the wild, you know, whether it's IP or PII or just anything that's, you know, that is not foilable and stuff that, you know, things that we need to, documents that we need to protect, is that identifying those and then making sure that we have the protection schemes in place to guard those. There has been and should be a broad emphasis on perimeter and, you know, detection and smart authentication and trusted internet connection. All that stuff's extremely important. But I think all of us are beginning to realize that no matter how good we do that, we are going to have intruders. And so the next question becomes, okay, well, if they break into your house, are the jewels in the safe? Are you protecting your assets? And are you making it hard, if not impossible, for them to get to those things? And so I know at DOT that we're spending a lot of time identifying those high-value information assets and what we're going to have to do to make sure that they're isolated and doubly protected. And if we do that, then I think we'll put ourselves in a much better posture to defend against the intruder.
OMB launched that 30-day cyber sprint. A lot of people that I've talked to are kind of scratching their head, 30 days, what can you do in 30 days? And my response has been, I think it's more about putting the focus, really heavy focus for 30 days. What's your take on that sprint?
I'm absolutely a supporter of it. And I think it's just a reflection of the urgency of the moment. And also a recognition that some of this stuff that needs to get done, that we should do it with all as fast as we possibly can get it done. And so calling it a cyber sprint, you know, we call it a sprint for a reason, is that we have some loose ends that we need to tie up, and we mean to identify what those are, and we intend to get those taken care of as quickly as possible.
I know in your staff, Drew Orndorff is the CISO. Is he the one that is really running with this sprint? I mean, I'm sure your track shoes are on too, being the CIO, but how does that kind of filter down into your organization?
Drew and his staff that are participating in this sprint, and it's a broader team at DOT that's conducting this survey of the high value assets and trying to define exactly what it is that we mean to put an extra layer of protection around.
Finally, just want to shift over to workforce. That's a big focus of yours. I know you have said in the past to me that having the right workforce in the CIO shop gives confidence to your customers within DOT to say you will get whatever they need done and done the right way and make sure it works. There's news just on Wednesday with the Agile BPA coming out from 18F, so there's a lot of move to Agile. Give me a sense of your workforce. Is it to the point now where you hoped it would be when you first got in? Are you filling those holes, the skill gaps, and where do you see it going?
Well, it's not where I hoped it would be, but I don't want to say it like that, but I will say it's moving to where I hope it will be. And so I'm a firm believer that, you know, you're only as good as the people. You're only as good as your team. IT is a team sport, and it's the people that you have on the team, how they're trained, how they're equipped, how they're empowered, you know, striking the right balance between federal employees and contractors, you know, how you train people, how you compensate for them, how you build pipeline, you know, for the jobs where we're competing heavily with the private sector for those talents. All of those things are very important. Building an IT community, you know, this past week we had an IT symposium that was sponsored by the CIO Council. We're trying to build community so that the people in the various departments who attend to these, these issues, and who are the builders and the thinkers and the people who are actually down in the trenches getting the work done, that they know one another and that they're sharing ideas and learning from one another. All of that's very important. And Darren and I and the workforce committee are trying to think of ways that we can continually strengthen the IT workforce.
We have to take a break. My guest today is Richard McKinney, the Transportation Department CIO. I'm Jason Miller. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. In this part of the show, we hear from Greg Garcia, the Executive Director of the Army IT Agency.
Greg, let me start with something that I think you're talking about at the Brocade Federal Forum that's being talked about a lot in government is the idea of innovation and how to bring innovation to the quote-unquote stodgy old government. From your perspective, ITA has always been an organization that has been innovative and out in front in many regards. I remember talking with you years ago about, you know, virtual desktop interface, moving to the cloud, for instance. But let's talk more broadly about how do you do things differently? How is ITA helping to take that concept of innovation and apply it?
The idea of innovation really is a complex discussion. Much of innovation success grows from cultural change. And I think we have a great new perspective in the DOD. The DOD CIO, Mr. Halvorsen, has really asked us to think differently about how IT services are delivered and to really instill innovation that drives efficiencies and effectiveness in the balance. So this is really what we've been focused on. As we've talked before about virtual desktops, we have completed that fielding production for the joint staff. We've moved on to fielding production here very, very shortly for the Headquarters Department of Army staff. That'll be somewhere between 8,000 and 12,000 on the unclass side. Generally in the Pentagon, we've had interest from other mil departments and other agencies to look to leverage that infrastructure we built. So very good progress on that. And the next iteration of that innovation is how do we perhaps get down to fewer images to manage? One thing that the team has looked at is what we called affectionately JADE, a joint active directory environment, where we're looking to be able to do multi-tenant and then reduce tenants to be a common image, again, further pushing the commonality, shared services, ability of our organization to deliver those great products and services to our customers. We've also looked at innovation ideas in our storage capacity. Very recently, which I'll talk about a little bit later, is the great things we were able to do with Brocade as a service, really balancing CapEx, OpEx, and examining that way to better buying power that the DOD is really after and to leverage those limited dollars that we have. You know, for the Army, the Army operating concept is win in a complex world, and that really is the challenge we face today. Operationally and in cyber, those are very complex, and innovation is the key to bring those capabilities to bear at a price point that we can afford that accomplishes that mission.
So there's a bunch there you mentioned, including shared services, which I know we'll get to in a little bit. Let me start with Jade. You mentioned that as a joint active directory environment. Talk a little bit more about what that is.
Yeah, so that's going to really help us manage the infrastructure in a singularly fashion that allows the customer end to have the very tip top of that performance stack for how they want to manage that. And the goal, again, is to take joint staff, perhaps, and the headquarters department, Army environment, desktop image, and then begin to merge that so there's less and less that they have to worry about, and more that becomes common and available through the shared service provider. I think that's a great way to manage that complexity by those that are IT professionals and really let the mission operators focus on their mission. So I that's how I see it.
Are we talking more than about a common core desktop? We're talking about, because it's Active Directory, that's usually something in the background. You think of Active Directory, you think of email even, which I know that's something that DIS has been providing the enterprise services there. And the Army is the biggest user of those enterprise email services. What's the benefit beyond the email side?
Yeah, I think that's a great foundation for identity management, both of individuals and objects. With an Active Directory structure that is shared, you can begin to build rule sets, authentication procedures, all in the background that allows that, the confidentiality, the integrity, and the availability of those underlying systems, be it email, unified communications, or access to applications underneath that in a very proactive manner.
The other thing you mentioned was the continued expansion of a virtual desktop interface, VDI. Talk a little bit about the benefits you're seeing from that. Is it something that people are now more comfortable with?
I think they're growing more comfortable with it. I think one of the first things we were able to see is really the power reduction. We've talked about this. The two big things is power reduction and cybersecurity posture. The power reduction comes from a small energy-consuming device that's on the desk versus the desktop that's there or the laptops there on a scale when you're talking about 1,000, 10,000, 15,000. But I think the greatest benefit we've seen to date is the cyber posture of that image. The other day, I actually jumped for joy in my office. I don't get to do that a lot. I actually physically got out of my chair and jumped for joy because we were 100% compliant on our VDI image for all security requirements, 100%. That means everyone that is drawing that image from the back end is getting 100% compliant image to the latest IAVAs and CVEs on the cybersecurity posture. That is the kind of thing you can achieve with a virtual desktop. Is that would take me weeks, months, and maybe longer if I'm chasing around 1,000 or 2,000 or 5,000 desktops, laptops. So that's the kind of great thing you can get. And that's really important in today's complex cyber environment, is shutting more and more windows to those vulnerabilities is really critical.
The third thing you mentioned was around the infrastructure and some work maybe you're doing with Brocade. Talk a little bit about how the infrastructure of VDI is a big part of that, but there's also the idea of software-defined network or the IP, the fact that more and more agencies are looking at kind of the next generation of IP network. Where does the Army IT agency go in?
It's really kind of exciting times. The tried and true sort of legacy configuration of networks has really kind of been disrupted by really several technologies. Certainly software-defined networks offers a brand new way to think about high reliability, highly resilient and highly capable systems that really are not limited. It's basically you've got scenario planning built in because it's rapidly configurable, rapidly changeable, where our hardware solution is a little less of that. I think also virtualization is a huge activity where you can virtualize. Really, the technology today lets you virtualize every transaction that you're going to work. You can put that in its own little security bubble. Certainly application virtualization, server virtualization is all important stuff. The cyber area is also very critical in making sure that's keeping up with that innovation cycle.
I want to jump into shared services. You guys, there's some news made by the DOD the other day, a couple weeks ago now, about a change to ITA. It's going to affect you. Move to a new Pentagon Shared Services Center. What's the latest with that, and how are you guys preparing?
It's actually a great initiative. One of the things that ITA has done really for 20 years through policy has been the the single agency manager for what we commonly affectionately call the common IT backbone. That's transport, that's COOP, that's storage. That's been consolidated for the Department of Defense in the Pentagon for the last 20 years. Really what we're going to add to that capability is, as I affectionately call it, the wall plate in part, the desktop, the printers, the copiers, all that user services that's in front of the core services in the back. So what the Deputy Secretary of Defense has authorized is the combination of these great forces together to a single service provider organization. This is going to combine the great workforce of the Enterprise Information Technology Service Division in the White House, in the Washington Headquarters Services, and the Army's ITA to bring those two forces together. The first phase of what we're going to look at consolidation, full consolidation, we've already got the CIT consolidated, consolidating the desktop, is really to look at the fourth estate. There are about 63 organizations that are parents or sub-organizations to those that we're looking at ensuring they get the value of economics and efficient delivery through a single source provider. Just within the two organizations, there's hundreds of contracts. That's hundreds of man hours that take to do that. We're looking to streamline that. One, for instance, is we looked at fourth quarter 15 contracts, and we were able to consolidate 13 contracts right away. We're looking at other ways to begin that implementation. We're looking for an initial operating capability by the 20th of July, and that really is going to forge a strong relationship between those two organizations, coupled with the strength of an enterprise provider of DISA, to really bring that full capability to the Pentagon tenants for end-to-end IT services. It's pretty exciting.
The OPM hack, something that's been in the news a lot. A lot of people are talking about it. It affects so many people in the government, probably you as well. What do you take from that? When you stand back, what does that mean for you as the Army IT agency? What a kind of reminder, because in many ways, the OPM CIO could easily be your CIO, could easily be you sitting in that spot, trying to tell Congress how you're protecting your systems. What do you take from their experience and how do you apply it to what you do?
It's a very complex situation. I think what everyone has to remember is that cyber is a 24/7 sport and a contact sport. As I understand it, you know, there's a need to modernize and improve legacy networks, applications, systems, but you got to continuously apply the cybersecurity requirements as you do that modernization. You can't really pause because how a lot of people have said it is us that are in the cyber protection business have to be right 100% of the time. Those that are attacking us have to be successful 1% of the time or less. So that makes the complex. There's no intermissions. There's no half times. There's no two-minute warning. There's no timeouts. It's 100%, 100% of the time that those that wish to do this great country harm are looking at those systems. And so you really have to be resolved to balance operations and cyber consistently and pervasively to ensure that you can modernize, but you cannot compromise on cybersecurity. And I think the takeaway is that's a very difficult challenge that takes resources, dedication, and focus. And that's really a difficult thing to do, but that you've just got to kind of be resolved to do that.
And I know DOD has already been ahead of many, many agencies when it comes to cyber. Are you guys re-looking at how you go about cyber in any way? Are you re-looking at, for instance, how you protect certain specific assets, information, data, et cetera?
I'll just maybe take a tangent of that. I think one of the great things the DOD has, this capacity has, is our cyber protection teams. The services that are fielding these teams, those add a great dimension to independent assessment analysis. I had the great fortune of asking Lieutenant General Cardone to have his cyber protection team come and look at us, and it brought great insight, because it's not the people that see it every single day, fresh eyes, fresh ideas, and really are able to help us in a staff assistant visit to improve and validate what we've implemented. I think that independent verification validation is really probably what's required for all these agencies, because sometimes you get lulled into the incremental change that you make every single day, and then pretty soon you might be off course. So these independent cyber protection teams are a great national asset for the DOD, both at the U.S. cyber secure comm level and also at the service U.S. Army cyber level. Great resources, very smart teams, and bring that capability to do that assessment and improve all that they get to view.
We have to take a break. In this part of the show, my guest is Greg Garcia, the Executive Director of the Army IT Agency. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. In this part of the show, I play an excerpt of a panel discussion that included Greg Garcia and Richard McKinney at the Brocade Federal Forum. Joining Garcia and McKinney are Commerce CIO Steve Cooper and Soraya Correa, the Chief Procurement Officer at the Homeland Security Department. The panel was moderated by Steve Charles, co-founder of the IMIX Group.
Starting with you, Greg, what's driving the need for all this new capability that we're seeing, and how are you guys starting to address that?
I think the primary driver we're facing right now is budget. I know we talked about there's plenty of money out there. In the Department of Army, we're trying to focus that resources that we have on the operational mission. As you know, the Army operating concept is win in a world, complex world, and that's really what we see. I serve as the Tier 2 C&D SP provider for the Pentagon, so really we see a big challenge on operations and cyber that we've talked about. So that's growing to be a critical impetus to how we change, innovate, and adapt to a world that requires less consumption of resources. I love the comment about not agreeing with do more with less, but do what's most important with what you have. And that's really the balance that we have to strike. Clearly in cyber, you can never compromise cyber while you're trying to do operations. It's a very delicate balance, something that we manage, you know, are after every single second of the day. We kind of like to say it, we get like a 17-second rule between something not going perfectly and me knowing about it. And that could be anywhere from, you know, the secretary or the chairman all the way down. So really that's the operational pace we have. So great things in network modernization, virtualization, network functions virtualized, figuring out how to interact with the global commons of the DoD network are all things that we have to manage day in and day out.
Okay. Richard, how about you?
Well, you know, I'd like to pick up on something that Tony was talking about. The challenge I face at DOT is that, you know, and where I think we're, you know, where we have to improve is, you know, we do IT to affect a business outcome. And I'm afraid that what's happened over the years, at least in our department, is IT became so siloed and so federated and so complex, needlessly complex and difficult to manage, that we ended up spending all our cycles, and the term I like to use is that we became firefighters. And we fight fires all the time. And we, you know, because our sort of legacy construct requires that of us. And, you know, what I've been trying to do the last 2 years is engage the Department of Transportation in a reimagining of how we could do that. How could we do infrastructure differently? How could we get ourselves out of the IT business, sort of, you know, have a team of folks that does that as an enterprise service, have a great partnership with the private sector about how we marry cloud into what Tony was talking about, this a hybrid construct of that, so that the CIOs, myself included, the CIOs and the components of the department, could sit down with the business units and begin to imagine what the future is like and quit being firefighters. And because we don't do IT for IT's sake, we do it for a business outcome. And I'm afraid the fact that we've allowed our network and our infrastructures to become needlessly complex and costly, that's why we keep kicking this legacy can down the road. And I think, you know, there's a perfect storm going on right now. We have the recent events that have everybody's attention. We have the passage of FITARA. We have, arguably, you know, a maturation of cloud services that really is beginning to, you know, be a very attractive and meet our needs. And if we bring all those things together and reimagine where we could be, we could drive down our OPEX, drive up our modernization efforts, and we could begin to have the conversation with the business units about where are you going and how can we serve you and get there.
That's great. Steve.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in, and this is a made-up word, decomplexifying our environment. Hang on to it. You probably remember it now. It does just translate as simplify everything. So I've boiled everything that we're trying to do at Commerce down into one key driver, and that's speed to value delivery. Now, you can also think of it as speed to solution delivery. That's fine. It's all about quality with speed. That's it. Associated with that is risk management. So if I can speed up everything that I'm doing in terms of actually delivering solutions, outcomes, value as defined by my customers, which are my operating units, then I'm golden from their perspective, and then I have to manage all appropriate risk that we introduce from our IT activities, processes, functions, so forth and so on. Obviously, cloud, whatever we define as cloud, is a huge delivery path to faster delivery, and our acquisition colleagues are instrumental in kind of that pathway to value delivery. So with that, I think I set you up.
You did. Perfect setup. So as the procurement guru in the room, my job is to make sure, because this is all about the mission, it is all about mission outcome, and my job is to partner with the IT community and make sure that we're delivering good solutions together, that I'm helping you navigate through the maze of complex procurement processes and regulations, which really aren't that complex, and enabling you to use the tools that are available to engage more with industry earlier in the process so that we know what solutions are available, how we can adopt those solutions, and how we can more effectively buy and use those solutions. So my goal is to take advantage of the processes and procedures that are available out there to really simplify the process for you and enable us to be smarter, better, and faster at what we do and what we buy.
That's all the time we have for today. We heard from DOT CIO Richard McKinney, Greg Garcia of the Army IT Agency, and a panel featuring Garcia, McKinney, Commerce CIO Steve Cooper, and Soraya Correa, the Chief Procurement Officer at the Homeland Security Department. The panel was moderated by Steve Charles, co-founder of the Immix Group. I'm Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.